The Florida community of mindfulness is happy to make these talks available to you. If you find this talk to be a benefit, please consider making a donation to support us. You'll find a donation button on the talks section of our website, floridamindfulness.org. Thank you, and may you be happy and free of suffering.
Good morning, everyone, and thank you for coming. Before I get into the talk, I just want to introduce some people. So this weekend, we have had the first retreat of our second Dharma transmission group 4 years ago. Even though there's many, many types of offerings of teaching and practice opportunities for members and non-members, I felt that we really needed to have a core of people who had really absorbed in a systematic way the teachings and practices of Buddhism, at least the basic fundamental ones of the past. And so I put out a call for people who wanted to join this group. There were certain commitments, such as a minimum of 2 hours a day study practice, commitment to being part of biweekly meetings with the teacher, support groups, 4 weekend retreats a year, 5 to 7 days of solitary retreat. And these were all lay people like ourselves with families and jobs or whatever. So they also needed the support of their family, partners or whatever. And so I think we had 13 or 14 or 12 or 13 in that first group. That ended a few months ago, and put out a call again, see if there was anybody else. And so we just started a new transmission group. We have 15 people in it who've made this commitment for the next 3 years. There was one other criteria beside a history with our community, is that they had to be under 60. So a little bit of age discrimination there. But since I am over 60, I can get away with it. Because we're thinking of the future of our community. So I'd like to, I don't know if anybody's here from the first group. Could you just stand up so people know who you are? And just say your name and where you're from. And up in the... Because of an overflow, we have a number of people upstairs who seem to be. Angie. Okay. And now if the people in the new Dharma transmission who've been meeting this weekend, if you can stand up and introduce yourself and say where you're from. We'll start with Marcy. North Carolina. And up in the, And up in the balcony, we have. So just wanted you to know who in our community has made this commitment, and please keep your eye on them. We expect great things. So this morning I wanted to continue the teaching that I began, was it 2 weeks ago, with the Six Realms? Yes? Okay. Because when I finished the Six Realms, I had made a reference to the that there are other realms that are enlightened. And I never got to that. So a number of people came up to me afterwards and said, hey, aren't you going to tell us about those? So I figured it was only fair not to dwell on the suffering aspect of life. But before, how many people were not here 2 weeks ago? Okay, then let me do a little review, and it's always good So let me just, before I say that, how many people are sort of like brand new today? Oh, okay. So let me say something about listening to a Dharma talk. Dharma is, the teachings of the Buddha. Sanskrit word it means, it refers to that body of teaching. So going back to the Buddha himself, he said to his students when he gave talks, he gave them a kind of a three-part process. He said, first, hear the teaching. Second, reflect on, contemplate. And after doing that, if it makes sense to you, if it accords with your intellect, your experience, your logic, then practice it. Okay, so this is an ancient way of listening to a Dharma talk. The problem is, we are not very good listeners. Right? Even as the talk is being given, we are analyzing, interpreting, responding. You know what I mean? We that's part two, you see. And so oftentimes, even though we are reading something or listening to something, we really aren't hearing it, because it's all filtering through our own conceptions and rationalizations and our own understandings and our own things that we find good about it. You know what I mean? You see, that's like, that's the second stage. But because for many of us, and this is not just when you listen to the Dharma, this is when we're talking to anybody, right? We don't listen. We're not just pure vessels of listening to really take in what is being shared with us. And often what's being shared with us is not simply the words, but it's also sort of the energy and the being and the unspoken. Right? And so learning to be very present and attentive to what's being spoken is a good skill for all of us. And then again, if what has been said is worthy of reflection on, contemplation, thinking about, then do it. And only afterwards, if it makes sense to you, you may think of adopting it as another way of seeing things. And so what I'm going to talk about when I talk about the six realms, and I'll talk about it again a little bit, and then enlightened realms, I'm talking about a way of looking at what's going on in our world that is very different than our modern view. Our modern view, I mean, many people look through the lens of economics, why things are the way they are. They look through the lens of politics, why the things are, or sociology. Or, you know, there's so many different ways, history, political history, there's so many different ways, religious, you know, there's so many ways, voluminous ways, that we interpret why the world is the way it is. Why are things unfolding the way they are? Is that it? And we tend to have a kind of a view that looks at the external movements of history and even to the present, rather than this more, I think, so I want to present to you a very ancient, but I think very perceptive way of seeing what's going on that is very radically different and the way we do in our modern age. And I think, to me, there's a lot of intelligence behind it, but I understand it's another way of looking and understanding things. And also comes up with a different kind of conclusion about what to do. Because it's really based on your view of things that oftentimes we act or don't act. And that's not just in terms of what's going on in the world or what's going on in people, but in many areas. So there's this ancient formulation that's called the six realms of existence, right? The six realms in which, let's say, all beings in this world participate, right? And it's not necessarily a geographical realm as much as it's a realm of consciousness. Now, what are these six realms? Well, they are, they ascend and descend. But basically, fundamentally, all of them, and these are kind of what call worldly realms, unenlightened realms, and they'll be very familiar to us. But in their purest aspect, and then I'll get to the human realm last, even though it's sort of in the middle, in ascending order, the first realm is the realm of hell. Meaning it is a realm of unremitting suffering. And it's very much characterized traditionally as being a realm where there's just incredible violence, aggression, anger. That's just all, it's hot. But it's really a place where people just in their own minds and in their own relationships, and it often manifests in historical places, there is so much unremitting suffering, so much darkness, and people cannot see a way out. Is that clear? It is hell. And many people know that place, or know people in that place. It's a place really of unremitting suffering, where people cannot see another way, so they just endlessly act out. Even though it's creating suffering for themselves and others, they can't see a way out of it, so it's endlessly repeated, okay? So that's like hell. Above hell, and these aren't happy places, there's what's called the realm of hungry ghosts. Pretas. And these are beings, the characteristic of the consciousness there is unremitting thirst and unsatisfactoriness. It is these hungry ghosts are kind of characterized, drawn as beings that have large mouths, large bellies, and their necks are like the size of a pin. You can see the problem. Their appetites are large, and yet their appetites are never satisfied. I mean, they got a big mouth, so they can stuff a lot in. But it never gets digested, so they always feel hungry. Right? So this is a realm of just this kind of unremitting dissatisfaction and wanting, needing, must have. It's really sort of the consumer culture just totally gone bananas, right? Because it doesn't matter how much we consume, how much food we eat, how much drugs and alcohol we take, how much sex we have, how much shopping we do. You know what I mean? It doesn't matter, right? We can consume, and yet the place where you feel full, right, which is your stomach, nothing ever gets in there, so you never feel full. So you're always having to do what? Even though the capacity for satisfaction is almost nil, we still keep eating because we feel this hunger. Something's missing. I need. I must have more. Stimulate. I mean, it could be anything. You know what I'm saying? So this is the state of the hungry ghost. And again, not so unfamiliar. Above the hungry ghosts are the animal realms. And I realize in the past several thousand years, people look at animals very differently than they did a couple of, so don't be offended, people who love their animals. But and perhaps think they're more intelligent than human beings. But basically, the animal realm traditionally was considered a realm of also great suffering. Animals are always preyed upon. So there's a chronic kind of looking over your shoulder. The rabbits are always, you know, I mean, if you watch animals, birds or other animals, unless they're at the top of the chain, they're always looking around to see, you know, who wants to eat them. So they're always anxious, they're always a little scared. And of course, we don't need to talk about domestic animals that are slaughtered for food. I mean, so there's, you know, as well as the animal realm is sort of primitive. I mean, most animals are just concerned with what? Survival, food, shelter, you know, I mean, you know, staying out of the rain, if you know what I'm saying? They're, you know, procreating. Their needs are very primitive. And when their needs are satisfied, they're okay. And animals tend to live in, you know what I mean? They live in their own rut, you know what I mean? I mean, they just do what they do. Birds do what they do, and they keep doing it over squirrels, you know. I live in Seminole Heights, there are a lot of squirrels. You know, every day they come down, you know, from their nests, and they just do that, you know, right? They run around looking for something to eat. They fight with each other, right? And then at the end of the day, they go back up the tree. Right? Next day they come down, you know, and they... Right, and so most animals, it's a very repetitive. They don't really see out of their little narrow life. And another characteristic of animals, and again, don't take this the wrong way, is they don't have any capacity of looking at their life situation and choosing another way to go. Right? They never think, you know, there's got to be a better life than just collecting acorns. You know what I mean? There's got to be, you know what I mean? Or this endlessly, you know, always looking over my shoulder. You know, why don't all the birds, why don't we all get together? Right? You know, you see what I'm saying? You know what I mean? Like human beings, like the birds go, why don't we all just get together? There are a lot of us. I mean, let's gather all the birds and let's kind of form our own, what? Protective association or something. You know what I mean? And, right? They can't do that, can they? They're animals. And again, so this kind of life mind state, again, is not known to us. There are many human beings who also live life on this very basic level. And once their basic level of needs for food, shelter, clothing, procreation are met, content. Now I'm going to skip the human realm. That's number four. I think the upper two are very interesting because I think they explain a lot of what's going on in our world, in our country, in politics. So above the humans are the Titans, right? And the realm of the Titans, they're concerned with power, control, accumulation of power and wealth and control, right? And they are very aggressive and competitive. And a characteristic of them is jealousy, envy. They don't want anybody above them. And they're very happy that there are people below them. These are the Titans, and they manifest in their world, in politics, in the military, in corporate world. They live a life above everybody else. They are the demigods, right? And they love to lord over, and they don't like hanging out with people below them. They like hanging out with the gods, but they don't like hanging out with anybody below them. They think they're, you know, they really think they're it, but they're, again, competitive, aggressive, somewhat paranoid, because they're, you know, it's a realm where people are competing with you. You know, so you're going to kind of go, uh-oh, somebody's trying to get ahead of me. Somebody's got more money than me. Somebody's got more power than me. Somebody's, you know, got a bigger country than me. Right? Somebody has more this. You know what I mean? They're always, these are the demigods, but powerful. That's what they're concerned with. Now, above the demigods are the gods. Now, the gods, these are like, they're into what? Pleasure. They're beautiful. They're the beautiful people. And they live the beautiful life. And they just enjoy pleasure and sensuality, and everything is just beautiful for them. Right? That's what they're into. Right? Now, the gods are kind of jealous of them. I mean, and the demigods are kind of jealous of them. They'd like to really be like them. Right? But they're so busy accumulating and fighting and competing, they can't just relax and enjoy the pleasure and the wealth of the godlike realms. And the one thing about the gods is that they suffer from pride. They really think they're very beautiful and very special. And they think they're entitled to it too. So, you have these five mind states. So, is everybody clear? Because the human realm is characterized, well, let me first tell you about the human realm and the interesting thing about the human realm and why in this schema, the human realm is considered of the five, of the six, the most, the only really one that has any advantages. Okay, because these other five realms are all kind of pretty much monochromatic. You see what I'm saying? They don't see out of their realms. People who are in hellish realms, they're just trapped in their suffering. And they just endlessly crave. People who are in the hungry ghost realms are endlessly consuming and wanting and needing and never satisfied and always wanting more. Animals, you know, they're just concerned with kind of, you know, getting through the week and making it to the weekend, right? I mean, that's... You know, that's what it's all about, right? You know, right? And again, the demigods are just endlessly consumed by power over, right? And their competition, and the devas are just, you know, endlessly enjoying themselves, the beauty. You know, but the gods have a lot of problems with impermanence, you see. Because their expectation is what? This will go on forever. I will be beautiful forever. Right? I will have a life of ease forever. People will love me forever. Right? And then as they begin to age or get sick, and even as death approaches, they really go downhill. This was not part of the plan, you see? In the same way for a demigod kind of being out of power or people calling you on your stuff is not part of the plan, right? Now, the human realm is characterized by desire. Not the craving and the total unsatisfactoriness of the praetors, because in the human realm, we can often get what we want in the short term. So we're consumed with just kind of slowly advancing, but we like it our way. You see, we want to succeed, but we don't want to not succeed, right? We want pleasure, but we don't want pain. We want to be known and liked and loved, but we don't like to be unknown or not liked or not loved, right? We like gain, we don't like loss, right? So those are called the worldly winds. So those are always blowing through human life. So it's very unsettling. You see, it's very unsettling. So we're always sort of unsettled and always very busy trying to get this and trying to get rid of that. And we're very hopeful that somehow if we just get this, and if I get this, get this job, get rid of the present job, get the right job, get rid of the present relationship, get the right relationship, get rid of the present house, get the right house, you know what I mean? Then everything will be what? Happy. If I could just get my body in shape, if just take enough supplements, so I'll never get sick again, you know what I mean? We're always working incredibly hard to be happy. So there's a lot of hope in the human realm, but there's also a lot of fear because we're afraid the good's not going to last. You know, the job's not going to, you know what I mean? We're just, so there's, it's characterized by this hope and fear. Is that clear? You know, hope we're going to win, afraid we're going to lose. Right? Hope things are going to work out, afraid they won't work out. Hope that the kids turn out okay, afraid that they won't. You know what I mean? Like, you know what I mean? So we're just never at ease. Okay. This is the human realm. As well as we have this very significant problem in the human realm, is that we get old and die, which is like the ultimate bummer. Do you know what I'm saying? It's the ultimate bummer because here we are working so hard to get our body in shape, to eat the right foods, to take the right supplements, you know what I mean? And to, you know, get the right house and to get the right job. You know what I mean? It's like, and it doesn't last. You know what I mean? It's like, can you see what a disappointment that is? You mean like at any time I could die and I'm going to have to leave it all? And it doesn't matter, you know, how many degrees I have or how good a job I have or how good the relationship, or even the opposite. In the end, it doesn't matter because I'm going to die. And everybody in my life's going to die. And everybody dies. And it all comes to an end. Can you see? That's really not part of the plan, you see. And for many of us, aging is not part of the plan. Getting sick is not part of the plan. So we're always, you know, really tossed about and disturbed by impermanence of life. Right. Now, again, the other five realms, we can also see to some degree or another, are present in the human realm. Right. So I think we all know, whether we know them personally or we read about them, you know, in People magazine or whatever, you know what I mean? We realize that these realms exist. Right? I mean, there are places on this earth that are hell. And there are people on this earth and in our town and in our community whose minds are hellish. Unremitting. It's like they're on fire with their suffering. Right? And we may ourselves know there have been times when we've been like, and we know that state of craving, of wanting, must have, and not really getting satisfaction. And we all know the good feelings that comes when you have power over somebody else, when people look up to you, when you know what I mean. That's, you know, winning the race, competition. We know that power. And, you know, and if we've ever been to a spa, we know that, you know, the pleasurable life is nice. Go to a nice hotel. You know what I mean? Go to a nice restaurant. They wait on you. They treat you like you're somebody special. Right? You know what I mean? We know, wow. We know that feeling. But it doesn't last. So, why is the human realm most advantageous? Because we have one thing that none of the other five realms have, and this is very important. We have this capacity to be self-aware. we have the capacity to be aware of our situation, right? Right. We have the capacity of like having this conversation, right? Rabbits and squirrels and, you know, and just people in these various realms who don't have this kind of freedom, don't have this capacity to go, is this life working for me? You know, is it really satisfying? Is it really meaningful? Am I really happy? Do I really, you know, sometimes we, you know, do I have a loving heart? I mean, is this, we have this capacity which nobody else, no other realm has, to be self-aware, to look at our life, our situation, or the life of the world or whatever, and we might say, and think about it, right? To logically think about it, and to not only kind of reflect and be aware of our situation, but we have this wonderful capacity, for some of us, to realize there are other ways of living, other ways of being, which are much more satisfying, much more meaningful, and will produce much more happiness than the way I've been living or the way most people are living. So this capacity of self-awareness, which often manifests at the very thing that we come to meditation. Many people come to meditation. Why? Because they're sick of their thinking, right? And they're hoping they can come to meditation. Why? To stop thinking. Sound familiar? Thinking is not the problem. It's the kind of thinking we're doing. It's our misuse of this capacity the mind has to generate some kind of capacity of intelligence. We don't use that. And yet, we won't go down that road. So, this capacity to be self-aware and to reflect on and think about our situation, the situation of our families, our children, our society, is the greatest gift we have to be born in a human realm. So again, for human beings, for most, which are we, when you think about these realms, these six realms, we realize, well, we're always kind of cycling through them, aren't we? You know, we look at our life, we look at the lives of the people, and we see, well, you know, it's like an algebraic kind of formula, you know, and some point, you know, we might go, well, I'm, you know, only 5% of that, but I'm about 15% of that, and I'm 25% of that, you know, and we may think back and go, oh, at some point I was about 80% that, you know. So we're always in movement. We're in flux. In other words, we're cycling through. We're just, you know, and that's the way most of us are. We just keep working it, doing our best, buying a new self-help book, going to meditation, you know what I mean? Reading, learning about, maybe I'll try Buddhism this week. You know, so nothing's worked up to now. You know, you see, we're endlessly circling up and down, in and out. And we're like, you know, the rat in the maze. We never get the cheese. And like the rat in the maze or in the, it's that little thing that goes round and round, you know. The wheel, thank you. I was wondering whether that had a fancier name, but okay. keep it simple, I like that. You know, we never give up. Well, that's not true. Every now and then, you know, we'll get into a depression, we'll get into a funk. But even when we do that, as soon as we get out of it, either ourselves or with medication, we're off and running again, right? Chasing the cheese. And the cheese is what? Happiness. Peace of mind. You know, you see, I mean, we're that's what we want. We want to be a loving human being. We want to be loved. We want to be happy. We want to be at peace within our mind. We want to be at peace with those around us, right? And yet we think we'll only get it if we get this, 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 and this, and this. So we're very busy. And so in this wheel of life, it's circular. It's like this drawing they have of like people going up and people going down. People going up and people going down. And we look at our life, we might even look at our, you know, we even talk this way to each other, right? We say to each other when we meet each other, we say what? How is your day? And people will say what? Good. Going up. We might say, I didn't have a good day today. Going down. But maybe tomorrow will be better. Going up. You see? And so we're endlessly going up. At home, at work, in our lives, in our mind, endlessly. Okay. Now. So this, well, that certainly was more than a summary, wasn't it? Anyhow, I think it's very interesting, these six realms, an interesting way. So let me just say in summary before we get on to the enlightened realms. So this is another way of looking at what's going on in the world. Oh, now I understand these guys or these women. They're titans, right? Their mind is only consumed with power, competition, you know, getting power over, seeing enemies everywhere, right? Oh, I get it. You know, you say, oh, that's what's going on. Yeah. No wonder we are just burning up our resources, even though people are talking about the extinction of the world. Oh, because we're what? What? We're hungry ghosts. We're just more. I have, better all. You know what I mean? It's like, oh, it's that hungry ghost mind state. Or we're just dumb. You know, I mean dumb in the sense like we say animals are dumb. They just can't even see what they're doing. Right? And many people in our world are just they don't even conceive that what we're doing and how we're living may be causing harm to ourselves and others. Right? So that's, you know, so I guess this is sort of a non-historical, non-sociological, non-political, non-religious way of looking at what's going on in this world, why it is the way it is, and therefore why it is unfolding the way it is. How could it not? How could it not? Now, that's pretty bleak. And it is called the wheel. It's called the wheel, which means it just endlessly goes around. Now, in the representations on the wheel, right in the middle, there is a figure. It's often dressed like a monk, like a Buddhist monk. And this figure is pointing in that direction, off the wheel. Right? Because in the wheel, there's only up and down. Right? If you're in the wheel, you know, when you're in one of the lower realms, the only thing you could aspire to is what? Yeah, I want to be a demigod. Yeah. I want to be one of those on top. Right? You know, I want to be a millionaire. I want to be a celebrity. I want to be a star. I want to be the head of something. Right? And that's as far as the vision of our society goes. Right? And yet there is this monk, for want of a better word, pointing off the wheel. And there's like a little, usually when it's painted, it's like a little kind of path or stairway. It's often sort of like a rainbow, very pretty. And you see people going up it. And they're going up to the corner of the painting where there's like this Buddha sitting. Right? There is another way to get off the wheel of this endlessly unproductive, unsatisfactory, ultimately unfulfilling way of living or way of indulging these kinds of mind states. Right? Off the wheel. And when you get up to these, and again, this is all, you know, metaphorical. So, in the Buddha realm, and Buddhas are human beings who are awakened, you all of a sudden have another whole realm that is very different than the realms that we've just been talking about. Because in this realm, and you know what they're concerned with? You know what they're cultivating? Not more, 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 more. Not me, 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 me. Not power, not pleasure. They're cultivating understanding. They're cultivating wisdom. They're cultivating compassion. They're cultivating loving kindness. They're cultivating patience. They're cultivating a whole slew of fundamentally wholesome and happiness producing. They're practicing mindfulness and meditation. You know, there's a whole nother way of living, of being, right? That this is pointing to. It is a path that leads out of suffering and dissatisfaction. But it is a path that can be realized in human form. It's really about a change in life and a change in mind. We don't have to leave the human realm. We don't have to leave our families. We don't have to leave our jobs. We just have to live and think in a different way in what's called an enlightened way. You know, enlightened is an interesting word because it implies what? The light has been turned on. See, before that, the light wasn't on, so we couldn't see clearly. We thought, if I just keep doing this and this and this, then I'll be what? What? Happy. I mean, isn't that what everybody told us? Right? Just do this, get the right job, get the right career, get the right relationship. You know, you just do this, this, and this, and this, and then what? You'll be happy. Well, that's easy. Right? But somehow along the way, even though in the short run, all these things do give pleasure, all these things do give momentary happiness, it never takes away the underlying disease that there's something missing, something not right. Right? Even when we get all the worldly happinesses or successes, you know, that's why these other guys are so busy. It's never enough, right? The demigods, you can never have enough power. Right? You can never have enough money. Can you? No, for these guys, you can't. It's crazy. Right? I mean, I grew up, I hate to show my age, but I grew up where, like, if someone was a millionaire, that was like a big deal. Wow, they're a millionaire. Who cares anymore, right? Right? They're billionaires. And soon they'll be, what? I think, are we close to trillionaires yet? We're probably close. It's like, how, you know, it's like crazy. It's insane. Right? In a world where there's such deprivation and such need. And yet, more, 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 more. Titans. Because they're not in reality. They're in their mind. They're trying to satisfy this grasping need. Anyhow, there is another way. Again, it does not deny that there aren't happinesses and pleasures and satisfactions in worldly pursuits, Again, the problem is they're all impermanent, they're all temporary, they're all transient. And ultimately, we find ourselves back in the same place within ourselves. And many people these days do not stop long enough to even touch that place within themselves. Because we have this incredible capacity these days to keep ourselves so busy, so stimulated with information, with activity, with busyness, that we never have to stop long enough to what? To feel the whole. And if we do feel the whole, and if we can't get busy, you know, right away and fill it up that way, we do what? We self-medicate. Or we get a prescription medication. I mean, nobody wants to admit that even though it all looks good, there's something just not right. Now, the Buddhas and the teachers understood that. Again, if you take Shakyamuni Buddha, the founder of Buddhism, he was a prince. Right? He was like at the top of his little society. He had pleasure, he had power, he had a family. I mean, he had all the good stuff. And yet he saw this quality in life, the impermanence, sickness, old age, and death, and this ultimate unsatisfactoriness. And so that was his existential crisis that pushed him into a life of asking deeper questions and looking for deeper solutions to the meaning of life, purpose of life, you know, a real path to happiness. All human beings want to be happy. You see? You know, we live in such a crazy world where all we can do, you know, all we can do is divide ourselves up, right? If there's a way to divide ourselves up and separate ourselves, we do it, right? You know, we do it, you know, country to country, nation to nation, language to language, religion to religion, gender, you know, I mean, like it doesn't matter what it is, race, ethnicity. I mean, we will divide ourselves up, you know, young versus old, right? South versus the North. I mean, right? I mean, we will just endlessly divide ourselves up until it's like painful. We can't even keep track of all the things we're supposed to be aware of and sensitive to these days, right? What's missing? That we don't see the commonality. You know, the commonality. We're all human. We all want to be happy. Right? Whatever your orientation, whatever your race, ethnicity, country, education, everybody wants to be happy. Nobody wants to suffer. Oh. Well, that's something we could all unite on. Yeah. Oh, I like that one. Yeah. Everybody wants what's best for their children. Right? Everybody would like to, you know, have shelter and food and medical care. You know what I mean? It's like, oh, okay, you know. Gee, that's very human. But it's very hard these days to not just get caught up in division and subdivision of the human race, of the human experience. See, when we do what we did this morning, we just stop. I mean, in this room of maybe 100 people, most of us don't know each other, do we? You know, we're all going to go back to our individual lives, right? We don't know who's rich, who's poor, who's this and who's that, and who's oriented toward this and who's oriented, right? We all sit here together. And what do? Huh? We listen, and then when we meditate, we do what? We're just present to our body and our breath. Oh. All of us, same thing. Right? Oh, common humanity, common experience. Mindfulness of the body, mindfulness of the breath, cultivating compassion, cultivating understanding, cultivating you know, understanding our minds, what causes suffering, what causes happiness. Right? I mean, this is kind of, this brings people together. Right? This doesn't divide, separate, segment. So, to walk a path, and in Buddhism, we walk a path. The path is to enlightenment. The path is to awakening. Awakening, you know, enlightenment again. When it's dark, you can't see. When it's light, you can see. When you're asleep, you don't know what's going on around you. When you're awake, you know what's going on around you. So, in Buddhism, we use these terms, enlightenment. Awakened, freedom, freedom from suffering. Right? This is the path. And we are so fortunate that for 2,600 years, there have been men and women who have walked this path and have liberated themselves from suffering, from all the things we've talked about. And not only have kind of enlightened themselves as to the true nature and purpose of life and reality, they've also shared the teachings, written down the teachings, you know, made the practices available. So here we are, it's like, it's so easy, right? But it's not so easy, is it? Why isn't it? It's because the hardest thing is to, coming back to the six realms and this wheel, is the hardest thing is what? To get off the wheel. Why is it so hard? Why, you know, it's like if you talk to an addict or you talk to an alcoholic, right? And you look at him and you go, I mean, their life is nothing but unremitted suffering. Is that true? Yeah. And yet, when they're in it and you talk to them about it, it's like, oh, I don't know. I don't know if I can do that. You know, I don't know. It looks too hard for me. Right? But anyhow, I enjoy it. You know what I mean? I got good friends, you know? Right? That's what we're like. We're addicted to this. And everybody around us is. You know. So, really understanding the human situation the way it was presented today, reflecting on it yourself, your own life, the lives of those around you, your parents, your family, your friends. You know, is this really working for people? Are they happy? Is their mind at ease? Are they, you know, do they live in equanimity? Are they at peace? You know, willing to ask those kinds of questions, sort of outside the box. Questions and comments. I'll stop here. Challenges, I don't care. Take a moment to reflect. Does this make sense to you? Does it seem like just Buddhist psychobabble? I don't know. Yes. Yeah, so again, yeah, the question is, this is being live streamed. Yeah, so, yeah, are there, yeah, actually it's very interesting. See, it's hard for us to believe it. You know, we have such a, and for those who come regularly, you've heard me say before, and again, I practiced for 30 years within the Western psychological tradition, you know, of helping people. We, the traditional American model of mental health is an absence of pathological symptoms, right? Like the same way traditionally American medicine was only about treating disease, right? But if you ever asked a physician or anything about, well, well, what can I do to be healthy? They look at you like, don't ask me. I'm just here to treat disease, right? So, you know, Buddhism has a very developed model of what it means to be a healthy human being, to be an awakened human being, to be an enlightened human being, right? And it's, I mean, it's not like, you know, you end up looking like this, you see. That's not the Buddha. That's just a representation. Right? The Buddha just means someone who's awakened. Who's awakened to their true mind. Who's awakened to everything that's wholesome. So on that path, right, to Buddhahood, which is what Buddhists are doing, there are stages of development. And it's very clearly delineated what things fall away, and they have names for them, right? Such one really has seen sort of, we might say, the unreality of the strong self, really has insight into the empty nature of self. Somebody has no longer, their life is not being controlled by desire. Not that they're desireless, but they're no longer controlled by desire, by needs. You know, again, coming back to my example of the addict or the alcoholic, when the alcoholic goes into recovery, it doesn't mean all the bars have closed, right? It doesn't mean, you know, that alcohol is not being sold anymore. It means that the alcoholic just doesn't want to go there anymore, right? Right? You know, it doesn't mean for the person who's the you know, endless consumer, it doesn't mean, you know, the malls have all closed down or Amazon is no longer available. It means that you as a person are no longer interested in spending your time, you know, shopping. Right? It's a personal transformation. So those states of personal transformation, of equanimity, the equanimous mind, those states of compassion and developing compassion and loving kindness are all very clearly delineated. They're called stream enterers, somebody who's just entered the stream, and people a little more advanced, a little more advanced, a little more advanced. Then they're called arhats, people who are really sort of personally developed. Now, after that, there's what's called bodhisattvas. Bodhisattvas are the next step, we might say. They're not just concerned with their own, ending their own personal suffering and their own personal liberation or happiness, they take a wider view. They go, you know, it's not just me. It's my family, it's my kids, it's everybody I work. I mean, this is, all human beings are in the same boat. Right? Just for me to think of myself and my own liberation and work out my own freedom is in a certain way still within the realm of selfishness. So, you know, in Buddhism, what we have is what's called, the awakened person whose life is dedicated to alleviating the suffering of others is considered kind of the highest, we might say, path to walk. Because the other path, which is sort of just concerned with one's own a self-liberation, which is certainly, there's nothing wrong with it, doesn't take in, you know, the world we live in. It's just, I suffer, I want to end my suffering. This other one is, I suffer like everyone suffers. And my own liberation and the liberation of others are all the same. And also connotes that you know, having the prime focus of your life. And it doesn't mean, you know, you're not working for a living, or you don't have a family, you don't have friends, or you don't take vacations. But it means in your mind, you know, what's really motivating you is your own personal transformation and then wanting to help others, which is ultimately is the most satisfying life. Because when we're just focused on ourselves, our own needs, our own wants, it's very narrow. Most of us don't really get happiness out of that. But when we feel like, wow, I'm really helping somebody, see, that feels good. Right? It's immediate, we know it. It's a different feeling than when it's just about me. That kind of happiness is very kind of constricted. You know, but when we, you know, love another human being, love meaning very open and warm and very understanding to another human being. And when we really just do what we can to be of benefit to them, to be of help to them, that feels good. Actually, most people who do that kind of activity tend to be what? Happy. You ever notice that? You know, people who are very kind and nice and sweet and always trying to help people, they tend to be happy people. People who always focus on their own selves, their own needs, their own hurts, their own pains, their own woundings, their own, right, their own needs, their own wants, how do they tend to be? Anybody notice? And maybe some of us have been there. Not that happy. Not that at peace. So, I mean, the interesting thing about this path of being benefit to others is that it benefits us. It's a better way of living. You know, and ultimately, we want to benefit as many people as we can. So we say, you know, my hope for the benefit of others, may I become a Buddha. I want to be a Buddha, right? I mean, that may sound like heresy, but in Buddhism, we talk like that. Yeah, I want to be an enlightened being. I want to be a Buddha. I want to benefit everyone. You know, that's like big, isn't it? Well, where do you begin? That's why it's a path. Oh, that's where I want to get to. Where do I begin? Well, first thing you got to do is calm the mind a little bit. You know, calm the mind a little bit. Oh, come back to meditation. Quiet the mind so we can see more clearly what's going on. Begin to look into our own mind to understand what is it in the way I act, think, behave, speak that causes suffering to myself and others, and what is it in the way that I think, act, and behave that seems to bring goodness to myself and others. You know, we can just do that by observing our mind. That's meditation, observing the mind. So there's, you know, there's a whole path of practice, learning how to be a kind person, a loving, kind person, how to generate compassion, you know, how to get out of our egocentric bubble and kind of, right? It's like where I started. It's like, you know, we live with people and we don't even see them. We're not even present to them. We can't even see their suffering. We can't even see the suffering that we cause them through our actions. Why? Because we're just totally self-absorbed. Right? So, are there any other questions or so that's just a little quick and dirty on the six realms. If you're interested, I'm sure you can find a lot more about the six realms and the enlightened realms, the unenlightened realms. It's quite amazing to know that people actually talk about these things, right? I mean, I never talked about these things growing up in my house. I don't know if you did. I didn't talk about these things with my friends, you know. It's quite wonderful to know that there have been people who you know, look deeply into life and really want to try to understand the human condition and why people suffer and how people can be happy. So we'll stop here.